Well, there's another storm brewing in the Republican Party over defense spending. Tomorrow, congressional leaders will unveil their spending plan for the coming year. Republican leaders want to maintain strict spending caps that were put in place during budget battles 4 years ago. But Republican defense hawks are backing President Obama's proposal to override those caps and boost military spending by $40 billion. To put this in perspective, we're joined by Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. And Derek, this is sort of an unusual position for the GOP to be in, to be trying to find this balance between the fiscal hawks and the defense hawks.
Republicans have historically been considered more hawkish on foreign policy, going back not just to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but to the Cold War as well. You have this strain of foreign policy hawkishness in the party that called for higher defense spending, even when at the same time they were calling for smaller government. The key example here would be Ronald Reagan, who said that he wanted to dramatically shrink the size of government, that government was the problem, but at the same time spent considerably more on defense.
Right.
So historically, calls for budget constraints have avoided the military. But what's happening here is really interesting. You have the two primary competing strains of the Republican Party, fiscal hawkishness and defense hawkishness, finally coming to a head. And so whereas in the past we haven't really had a lot of debates about military spending the same way we debate the fiscal possibility of spending more on education or social policy, in the future, it sounds like we might have that debate.
Well, and let's put it in numbers here. Where are we at this point when it comes to spending on defense? Are we spending more or less on defense than we have in the past?
It really just depends on how you choose to measure it. Let's take three distinct metrics. First metric, by inflation-adjusted dollars, we are spending more than we spent in the 1960s or the 1980s. By per capita spending, by spending per person, we're actually just under the Reagan years right now. Hmm. And third, as a share of GDP, and this is a measure that budget analysts use quite a bit to look at the growth of, say, healthcare spending or social policy spending, as a share of GDP, we're actually considerably lower than military spending was in the 1980s. So just about wherever you belong on the ideological spectrum, you have a metric to make your case here.
And of course, we have in the back of our minds what was said by President Eisenhower in his farewell address back in the 50s. He famously warned about the dangers of the military-industrial complex. Let's listen to a little bit of what he said.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
Derek, we should remember in this fight over the budget that it's not just people who are inside that Senate chamber who are weighing in. This is something that affects contractors and companies and lobbyists, and they are all weighing in. Is it even possible to cut back military spending at this point, given that military-industrial complex that Dwight Eisenhower was talking about?
Well, what's so interesting about how the country's changed since Eisenhower made that famous speech is that you look at our relationship to the military. When Eisenhower was finishing that address, we're coming off a period where the share of Americans in the armed forces had topped off around 10%. Now it's barely 1%. And so as James Fallows wrote in an Atlantic cover story just a few months ago, he pointed out that it's somewhat ironic that as the country's become more disconnected from the military, we have at the same time become more uncritically reverent toward the military. So he called this the chicken hawk syndrome. We're too scared, too chicken to closely examine the military, while at the same time have become too aggressive and too overconfident, too hawkish about our military's ability to win any war. So he sees these things, the recent failures of the military and our uncritical attitude toward it, is very much fitting together.
And this is coming at a time when we're talking about a fight against ISIS and Iran and the rise of China and whatever is going on right now between Russia and Ukraine. There are some who say we shouldn't be cutting at this time. It's bad for preparedness.
Right. Army Chief of Staff General Raymond Odierno did say that the force was now as unready at any time in its last 240 years or something. I don't want to disparage that, but there are so many demands on the U.S. budget right now that are of considerable importance. You have rising health care costs coinciding with an aging population. You have a growing need for education spending as we learn more about the importance of college for young adults and even for early childhood education for kids. And I think that it is reasonable to say that there are a lot of incredibly important demands competing for the attention of the U.S. budget. We should debate the fiscal seriousness of all of them.
Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. Derek, thanks as always.
Thank you.